Thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For 11 years, I've been a professional intuitive and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It's Sunday, January 7th, 2018, as I record this, the end of the first week of the new year. And I have to tell you something I've observed about the first week of the new year and the concept of a new year in general. Could they have picked a worse time to start anything? What genius decided to end and begin the year at the worst possible time for any kind of motivation or sense of change? It's just as cold and gloomy and uninspiring outside as it was a week ago. And I'm not just focusing on the seasonal affective disorder of the Northern Hemisphere. I personally think you guys in the Southern Hemisphere got it worse. The height of summer is my least favorite time of year, and the one time of year it would make absolutely no sense for me to try to corral my energies for some big push or try to shift my inertia. The solstices carry almost no discernible changes. It would have made so much more sense to make the new year start in spring or the fall. Autumn is when I experience the biggest creative surge, especially after months of heat and humidity and general lethargy. Moon cycles are nice to play with, as they mark something we can see with our eyes and feel in our bodies. But if you'll remember my Reboot Your Life episode from a few weeks ago, I specifically advised you not to wait or tie your changes to time frames so much. Do it when you feel like doing it, whatever it is. Pay attention to your own rhythms. Motivation can be fleeting, and we have to wait for these big waves to come, so by all means, jump on them when they happen to you. It doesn't matter if it's New Year's Day, or February 1st, or your birthday, or this afternoon. This afternoon would be the most powerful starting point you can pick, actually. It's even better than tomorrow morning, because all those are some days. They live in the future in a pretty glass box. Break it open today. Resistance is not futile. It's the most powerful enemy we confront on a daily basis. Resistance is New Age personal development Satan. And resistance loves it when you decide to do something next week, or when you wait to make a move because it's Mercury retrograde. Time is a construct. Let's ignore the timing and just make it happen, okay? On today's show, we're talking about 8 ways to tell the difference between the voices of your higher self and your ego. And of course, as always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show. So be thinking about a question or a concern you have, hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra message. Before I forget, I want to say a quick thank you to Heather Cox and Lindsay Shupala, my newest supporters on Patreon. I appreciate all of you who've pledged your support, and I'm really excited to see the new names each week. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and want it to continue, and that's very encouraging to me, so thank you. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access bonus Q&A episodes where you guys send in questions, I record answers to them, and they go out to patrons of the show exclusively. There's also a level of support with a guided meditation, messages from your spirit guides, and a new mastery level where you can download one of my courses for free each month. This month, the featured course is Manifest Anything. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show and Linda's time creating transcripts, and access to all the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. Okay, on to the interview segment of this week's show. I put out a request on Facebook for you guys to nominate people you'd like to hear me interview, and Dr. Keith Holden, who has been on the show talking about the mind-body connection, recommended Heather Alice Shea. Heather is here to help us tell the difference between our intuitive voices and our inner critics, especially as it relates to daily decision-making. You may want to have a pen handy for this. She lays out 8 ways, specifically, to identify which channel you're listening to at any given moment. Really practical, actionable intelligence here. And the story of how she discovered the voice of her own higher self is very powerful. I'm excited for you to hear it.
So I am Heather. My official name is Heather Alice Shea. I have to use my middle name because heathershea.com was taken by a swimwear model down in Miami. So so I go by my full name, Heather Alice Shea. And I am an intuitive life coach and currently working my way through a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. And basically what I do is I help people, I say, ditch their demons and really step into a more empowered version of themselves, really painting the picture of who they are now in relation to who they know that they can be, you know, their higher self. They're reaching their full potential in their future. So it's I do that through a mix of spiritual teaching, higher self alignment, and then just good old practical goal setting, you know, getting clear about what you want out of life, what's standing in your way, having a no BS policy towards taking full responsibility, right, for your life, and knowing that that you have everything you need right now to become the person that you want to be and that you are also meant to be, to make your life better and simultaneously help improve the world. So that's my passion. That's my why, and why I get up in the morning. So
I love it. I imagine that you were not always a professional intuitive. For all of us, you know, there's a turning point. It's usually a mortal confrontation or existential crisis. I've heard people call it the dark night of the soul. I call it the switch, because I think of it as something that was turned on, you know, like a light switch on a wall. You call it your awakening. So mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could share a little bit of your awakening story with us. What happened?
Wow, I love that. And I love the switch. Oh, I might have to borrow that if you don't mind. That's a fantastic way to talk about it. I think it's more accurately descriptive. You're 100% right. I actually haven't been in this space of owning my intuition or being intuitive my whole life. And I think most professional intuitives that you find, you know, a common story that you have is that they did have an awareness around their gifts. I didn't. I grew up in a very, very conservative, Southern, hyper-religious house, right? So anything that had to do with that kind of stuff was of the devil and was hippie, and you stay away from that, right? So I grew up in a very conservative home, and if you couldn't see it, touch it, smell it, feel it, you know, it didn't exist for me. But when I was 35 years old, I had a medical crisis. So about 5 years previous to that medical crisis, I was diagnosed with an incurable, very, very chronically, you know, I was chronically ill with an incurable disease that was very, very painful. So I had a surgery a year for, you know, basically four surgeries within 5 years. 2011, I didn't have a surgery. Each time claiming to fix it, right? They were saying, oh, you know, if we just do this and tweak that, you'll be okay. And so it was just really unbearable. So it all kind of came to a head in 2012. And, you know, I had spent my life trying to do the quote right thing, you know, try to be a good girl, try to do everything that I thought I needed to do to be blessed and happy, right? To live a right life. So I could be worthy, right, of God's bestowing upon me healing and blessings, all that stuff that we're traditionally taught in religion. And by 2012, I think just physically and emotionally, I couldn't take it anymore. So I had a big surgery that my doctors were telling me at the time would cure me, would fix it. And it didn't, actually. I had the surgery and I actually started to get worse. It was a period maybe of about 4 weeks. I just was not recovering from this surgery. And I had been sick enough over the last 5 years to realize, like, at this point, the utter clarity of the fact that the doctors did not have the answer rained down on me. It soaked into my psyche to the point that I just knew, you know, I am in real trouble here, and there's no one that I can really go to help me figure it out. So after I had this surgery and, you know, was just laying in bed, racked with pain, really not knowing what to do. I had this moment laying there where I realized that I could very well die from this. And, you know, as I look back on this experience, I don't know if I was really could have physically died. I'm not sure. All I know is in that moment, I really believed that I was going to, right? In my mind, I was facing my mortality in that moment. And I had lost my father in 2006. So I know I was very familiar with what death felt like and looked like. And so I was laying there just racked in pain and just really, really, you know, not knowing what to do. I thought, my God, well, if I have another episode, I won't survive it. If this happens in the condition I'm in, I'm not going to make it. And I realized going to the emergency room wasn't going to do anything. You know, so I thought to myself, well, God, you know, I really might pass. And in my mind, I saw myself laying cold and stiff in my bed, like I had found when my father passed away. Just my body cold and stiff. And I thought, oh my God, you know, if that happens, I don't want my daughter to find me like that. You know, she was maybe 8 or 9 at the time. And so I just went into this panic over what am I going to do if my daughter, if I do die, you know, how am I going to mitigate all of these horrible factors? You know, the inevitable conclusions that will come with my death. And so I was like, okay, if you do die, what you're going to do is you're going to get out of bed. You're going to go get your husband. You're going to make sure that he gets up before your daughter so your daughter can't find you. And then I thought to myself, Heather, you're not going to be able to do any of that because you're going to be dead. You're not going to wake up in the morning. And once that realization hit me that I was truly powerless, I was pissed. I have never been that angry. I call it my Lieutenant Dan moment. Have you seen Forrest Gump?
Yes.
So, you know, when he's on the shrimping boat and the storm comes and Lieutenant Dan's like up in the rigging and he's just going crazy. He's like, it's you and me, God, right now. Like, he's just so pissed off at God and life and everyone. That is how I felt.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, hell no. If I'm going to die, fine. But I'm going to have my reckoning with God. I have done everything that I can to ask for healing. I just my whole life, right? Like 35 years of all of this, just came to a head. And I said to myself, my body was shaking. I was so angry. I'll never forget this. It's so vividly in my mind. I was like, okay, fine. If I'm going to go out, that's okay. But you're damn sure going to tell me why. I was shaking. And I grabbed my phone to do a meditation. I had learned to meditate previous to this, about 6 months before this happened. I had read in the research that people who meditate have better, they are able to control chronic pain. So I had learned to meditate to control my pain. And I found that I could meditate very, very easily. I could drop into these like super relaxed states. So I thought to myself, I'm going to do a meditation and I pray, meditate, whatever, Buddha, Krishna, Shiva, Christ, I don't care. Whoever is up there is going to answer me. And so I set that intention. I'm like, I am going to get an answer. And as soon as I committed to that end, it was like a shotgun went off in my mind. I'd never had anything like that ever happen to me in my life. Very clearly and very calmly, I heard a voice that said, Heather, you can accept what has happened to you with grace and dignity, or you can remain in your anger and your bitterness for the rest of your days, however long they may be. The time is now. Choose wisely. That's exactly what it said. And I was like, holy shit. I'm, like that's never happened before. So I'm on to something. This is great. Right. So I laid down and I did the meditation, make a long story short. I started to feel as I went into this meditative state, I can only describe it as like waves that were, it felt like they were hitting my body of just unconditional love as I set my intention to go basically meet God, right? I now call this force the higher self, the voice of, you know, that voice that I heard and who I was really seeking communion with in that moment was my higher self. So now I know that it was really my higher self I was calling to. But I just felt this unbelievable love that melted all that anger. I'd never felt anything like it before. So as I, and it kind of dropped some of my resistance and my anger. And so I sat to myself and I said, Heather, you know what? Okay, fine. This is it. You've asked for this and you've gotten an answer. And so you've got to choose. And I said to myself, well, whichever one I choose, I'm going to do it all the way. I'm going to go all the way. So if I choose forgiveness, grace and forgiveness, I'm going to go all the way. And if I choose anger, I'm going to be the angriest son of a bitch you have ever seen in your life. Mm-hmm. And so I, of course I chose to be, you know, grace. And I said, okay, you know, I'm going to forgive and let go. I'm going to do it so completely that I'm not going to even ask to be healed. I want nothing from you. I have no questions that need to be answered. I have nothing that, not even my life. I'm not even going to hold on to my life. I let it all go. The only thing I want is more of this feeling, more of whatever this is, you know, whatever it is, it's rolling at me. I just want more of that. So, I fell asleep. I fell asleep to this meditation, but I woke up the next morning completely healed. And not only that, but I could still hear that voice always inside me. And so from that moment forward, I began the quest of really trying to figure out, okay, how did I just heal myself? What was that that just happened? And what is this new connection, this new opening? This, you know, very much I felt like I awoke the next morning to what I feel on every level was a new life, physically, emotionally, mentally, a new life. So, yeah, so that kind of began my foray into the esoteric and metaphysical world that I am so grateful for and so honored to spend my daily life dabbling in.
That's a great story. A lot of people on this show have a version of that story, and a lot of us, myself included, talk about communicating with various facet or aspects of spirit and guidance and spirit guides. And your expertise, you know, what you're known for now is communicating with the higher self. And so this, you know, bridges with that actual experience. So what happened for you is you awoke to this ability to access your higher self, right? So like, well, tell us why that's so important. Why is the higher self the aspect of spirit that you're most passionate about going for?
Yeah. So, gosh, that is a great question. And I've never had anybody ask me that. So you're going to, my little wheels are turning right now. I think the reason why I'm so passionate about higher self communication is that it's you with you. And I fervently believe that we need not look any farther than our own soul to find the wisdom and the guidance we need to live our best life. So Edgar Cayce is one of my favorite psychics, certainly of our modern age. And when you study his life and how he channeled spirit, and also if you, I think it's ARE, the name of his association, they're out of Virginia, I think, they have chronicled his psychic readings, and with it all, within a 95% of accuracy, that all of his readings accumulate to a 95% accuracy, which is unheard of. I mean, the weatherman wow. isn't that accurate, right? Like, come on, who do you know in your life gets it right? 95%? Nobody. So, one of the most incredible sages of our time. And when you study him, like I've studied his abilities in his life, it's fascinating. There are, I think it's three times on record when he was channeling that other entities came forward and said, hey, will you let us speak? We'd like to be your source of information, you know, coming through into your realm. And he responded while in trance, why would I do that when I have my own connection to the one, to the creator, and that's who's speaking now. Edgar Cayce channeled his higher self. So I'm fascinated by this. I guess, one, I think it's that we shouldn't look beyond ourselves, even if it's in the esoteric realm, right? Truly keeping it within, we should look to ourselves for that truth and learn to see ourselves as a full expression of the divine. Not that I have anything, I think it's perfectly fine to channel other, you know, to get in touch with your angels and your guides or whoever. It's not that I don't think there's value in that. I definitely do. But for the purposes of human evolution and for the purposes of our individual lives, I think a part of the human experience is to learn to depend on yourself and to know that that we really do have the wisdom and the strength to light up the world. And also, when you give yourself to yourself, you also then have something to give others. So that's why I'm really passionate about it. I think on a personal level, why I'm so passionate about it too, is my whole life I've struggled so hard with anxiety and self-doubt and self-worth issues, that as I have aligned with my higher self, it's made me able to overcome a lot of those insecurities, and it's really helped me a lot. And I find that when I work with other people to help them connect as well, they have a similar result. So,
okay. So how do we do it? What's the process for connecting with and communicating with the higher self?
Yeah. So I think that there are 1,000 ways to do this, which is what makes it so fun. And Slade, I love listening. I'll be honest, listening to your work and your podcast has really given me new and interesting ways to do it. So one, I think the way to do it is the way that works best for you, right? So get creative and have fun with it. I don't think there's any one right way. But for me, the first step, I think that I guess maybe makes it easier, right? Makes the process flow easier is to surrender. So when I tell my awakening story, a lot of people are like, whoa, that's really cool. Like, you woke up with intuitive abilities and you healed yourself. Like, holy shit, that's a miracle. What I say to myself is, no, that is not the miracle. That's the byproduct of the miracle. The miracle was that I chose to surrender, which is something that every human being on earth is capable of doing. So, you know, people here, like, when we have these fantastical awakening experience, I think to some extent it discourages other people, because they're like, dang, I actually had a person say this to me once. I wish I could have an illness so I could have that happen to me. I'm like, no, you don't. Just skip the illness and go straight to what it was. And I have thought a lot about this. What enabled me to connect to my higher self was that I stopped going it alone. I said to myself, I forgive and I surrender. I'm going to give myself wholeheartedly to a power that maybe I don't understand. You know, who even knows what God is? We've had so many words for it throughout, you know, human history. We don't even really know exactly what it is. It's this mysterious thing. So it's really being willing to walk hand in hand, or to give ourselves to that power in faith. And that is something that we're all capable of. So I think the first step is to say to yourself, to really get real and to say, okay, where is there resistance in my life? Where am I being insistent that it be my way? What am I really busy trying to control? Where do I have expectations, you know, around things? And then I get upset when those expectations aren't met, you know? So I think that surrender is the first step. And the power in surrender is that it puts you on the side of the infinite. You know, human beings, we're finite beings. We're bounded, finite little creatures. We'll never know everything that we need to know to deal with daily life. You know, I mean, we simply lack, you know, the cognitively, we just cannot understand the world around us. It's too far beyond us. So the ancients knew the solution to this. The solution is prayer, meditation. It's surrender. It's saying, okay, I'm willing to let myself work in congruence and alignment with the universal forces surrounding me. Instead of battling them, realize that if I allow myself to let go, those mighty forces will come to my aid. So instead of it being something you have to fight through, it's something that will partner with you to help your life become more effortless. So that's what I would say. I would say the first step, no matter what road you choose to take, if you're not surrendering, you're probably not going to connect. Yeah.
Yes, this topic comes up a lot, and we hear that all the time. Surrender, the art of surrender. I wrote a really popular blog post about it 10 years ago, and it's still one of my favorite ones. And it's one of the only things that I've ever personally written that I have to revisit for myself. Like, what was it that I told people? Because I need to be refreshed. And, I really do feel that topic is one of these things that gets channeled. It showed up in the Frank Butterfield episode. I was recently talking to Lori Ferentz about it, and she's been messaging me. Hi, Lori. Lately, the past few days, we've been having a conversation, and we refer to ourselves as students in the School of Surrender. And here's the thing. We're stumped by it. Like, the whole idea of, how do you surrender to something without needing it and wanting it? Because we have these things we need. We have these things that we want. We're aspirational. We desire all these things. And some of them are wonderful, wonderful things. And yet we keep hearing the message over and over again that the way to actually allow those things to come to you is to stop trying to get them. And so we're like, okay, what's the Jedi mind trick here? That surrender, while also, how can you surrender to the thing that you also want?
Sure. Because it's, I'm going to, this is tricky, right? To speak about it, because on the one hand, it's one way and it's very paradoxical. So I'm going to pray for the wisdom to not butcher this as I speak to it. But I think it's paradoxical because it's like, don't surrender, don't force it, sit still, be in stillness, right? Don't run around like a chicken with your head cut off. But at the same time, we live in a world of action. We live in a world at the human level, right? At this level of analysis, we live in a cause and effect dimension. So if you don't do certain things, we know certain things won't happen. So look, it's a challenge to be a human. It's a challenge to be a co-creator down here with the universe. This is not easy stuff. For me, I think the answer is it's surrendering. It's understanding that yes, you are going to have to move. You are going to have to act in a way that brings about your goals and your desires. And I think it's the Upanishads that starts with a quote about desire. I don't know it off the top of my head, but the basic gist of it is everything, what you desire, so the world becomes. The Upanishads sees desire as something that you absolutely have to have in order to create in life, right? Otherwise you just sit there as a nebulous nothing, right? So it's that will and that desire that moves and creates to begin with. For me, I think it's the intention with which we move, and then the why behind why we're moving. So I think surrender looks like this. You work towards your goals. You do things, right? You're doing stuff. You create a smart goals. You create a plan, 2-year, 5-year, however long it is, to get the stuff that you, to achieve what it is you want to achieve. But surrender says, yes, you need to move forward, but you don't move forward working for the payoff. You move forward and you create that 2-year plan, that 5-year plan, or whatever it is that you're wanting to accomplish in life. You move forward and create the plan in a way that allows you to enjoy the journey. And you do it for the journey's sake. That way, every single day of your life, as you're moving forward towards the goal, you're like, well, I would keep doing this forever because it's fun anyway. And if I don't get the promotion or the man of my dreams or the car that I want to drive, whatever it is you're trying to manifest, well, you know what? At the end of the day, you don't care anyway because you lived, you did it in such a way that it brought joy to your soul in the now. Mm-hmm. The payoff, if you happen to get it at the end, great. But, there's I think a key part of surrender too is understanding that everything is a risk. There is no definitive plan. There's no guarantee that if you do it XYZ way, you're going to get what you want anyway. So I remember watching a Jim Carrey video where he talked about his decision to become a comedian, and his father just discouraged him from doing it. So what are you going to do? Oh, you know, how are you going to live? Are you, you know, that's such an unsure bet. It's so risky. And Jim Carrey decided to become a comedian because his father wanted to pursue, I think it was to be a comedian or some form of art. And he didn't, he became an accountant, and then he lost his job and their whole family was impoverished. And I'll never forget what he said. He goes, I decided to take a risk and follow my passion and enjoy my life on, you know, the day to day, because you can fail at what you don't want to. So,
yeah.
So I think it's be motivated by what you think is going to be an end result that will enrich your life. Move toward that goal with a plan that is so freaking rewarding in your here and now daily life that you won't care if you get it anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's flow. I think that's when they talk about flow states, I think that's flow. It's holy crap, I am really excited to move into my future because, man, I might get that promotion. But you know what? If I wake up a year from now and I don't get that promotion, the path that I chose to walk to get that promotion is edifying in and of itself and rewarding. And if I don't get it, I'm okay too. So that to me is the Buddhist concept of non-attachment.
That's good. No, I like your attempt to pin that down. I hear a lot of people listening in this moment who are like, yeah, we're all nodding our heads. This is interesting because it speaks to a completely different part of my life and a different part of my brain. But one of my marketing coaches and my productivity coaches, who's not necessarily a spiritual, you know, source of information, but he was talking recently. His name's Tim Grawl, by the way. Tim Grawl was talking as an author and as a publisher and an editor, the productivity concept of not creating goals but creating systems. Stop making goals. Just create systems that inevitably produce a lot of those goals. You know what I'm saying?
Like, that's perfect. Yeah, I think that's a great way to say it.
Yeah, and that was a total aha moment for me, and I really I loved that, and I was taking that away, and it's something that I've been thinking about a lot just the last 48 hours. So your version of surrender just like connected my left and right brains together. So it's like, oh yeah, okay, that's kind of the same sort of philosophy. But I want to go back to just one thing about the higher self. How can we tell the difference between the higher self and the inner critic?
That's so great. Oh, Slade, you read my mind. Very shortly, I will have a course up on Udemy called The 8 Ways to Tell the Difference Between Your Ego and Your Intuitive Voice. So I teach this in my coaching practice. I've identified 8 ways to be able to tell. So here's what I have found in the last 4 years of working with clients on, you know, how do I know if it's my higher self or if it's my ego or, you know, my mom's voice, or, you know, there's 1,000 different types of voices in our heads, right? So what I find is that people spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out the quote right answer or the right thing to do, right? Like, should I take this job or not? One part of me feels one way, the other part feels the other. Should I move to Denver? Should I not? Right? So the focus is on trying to figure out what to do, right? The answer that voice gives you. What I say is, don't do that. Spend your time getting to know the qualities of your higher self versus maybe your ego voice, right? What is, it's like a friend, right? I think you can almost conceptualize it like they're individual people that you have a relationship with. And it is actually very much like that. We do experience it in that relational way, even though technically, you know, you are your higher self every single moment and consequently your ego every single moment. These are just aspects of your beingness. But so if you think of it almost like in a relational way, it's once you really understand and get used to the quality of what your higher self sounds like versus your ego, it becomes super easy to make decisions. It becomes super easy to understand what voice you're listening to, because it's like an old friend. You know what it sounds like. right? So, you know, like if your best friend calls you on the phone, they don't have to go, "Hi, it's Stacy." It's, you just know the voice. It's kind of like that. So, I can go through the ways. The first one is kindness versus criticism. If you're ever being critical to yourself, if you ever find yourself beating yourself up, that is not your higher self. Your higher self does not need to use tough love to motivate you. It understands that being patient and kind and truthful with yourself is really what's going to help motivate you. So one, if you're being critical, probably a sign that that's not your higher self. Your higher self is very solution focused, and the ego is very problem focused. So, you know, if you find yourself ruminating or focusing on what's wrong, that's a good indication that you're probably not having, you're not in dialogue with your higher nature. Because your higher self recognizes the problem. It's not like your higher self doesn't see the problem. It's not in denial. It sees the problem. But what it says is, okay, here's the problem. Let's map that out. Now what are we going to do about it? And let's stay in gratitude for everything else that's going right in our lives, right? So it has more of a macro view than a micro view. So the third is equanimity versus anxiousness. So your higher self, it's that part of you that just the whole your day can be going straight to hell, your life could be going straight to hell, but there is this part of you that can remain relatively calm and at peace in relation to that, that's kind of balanced. And, you know, that's your higher self. When you feel that feeling, that's an indication that you're kind of tapping into that. And the opposite of that is feeling anxious, which, you know, surprise, look out in the world. There's a lot of anxiousness going on. So if you feel anxious, that's a sign to stop, center yourself and get in alignment, with your higher self. Number four is unity versus dualism. So your higher self is always going to look for ways for everybody to have a win-win-win. It's going to seek, you know, your mindset is going to be, how can I look out for myself and everybody else? Not how can I look out for myself? How can I look out for me? And I need a win over here. And, you know, if it's a win-win over there, fine. But really it's, you know, it's me. The ego is more interested in you winning. And if it doesn't really care what happens to everybody else. The fifth way is curiosity versus fear. And that's a really good one, because how would your higher self respond in the face of something that's potentially, you know, dangerous? Now, of course, it's a bear. Obviously, you run. But I mean, you know, the things that we incur in our daily life, it gets curious about them. It actually wants to learn more about them. It doesn't run. It doesn't have knee-jerk reactions. Your higher self understands that you're safe, so it doesn't feel a need to protect you. It just gets curious. It learns more. It gathers more information, so you can make a better decision. Way six is highest good versus selfish interest. So it's a lot like unity versus dualism. It's always going to be seeking what's going to help you out, plus not only the people you care about, but your community. Another one is empowering versus domineering. So your ego wants to control, your higher self wants to empower you. It wants to help you do better, but it doesn't necessarily need to dominate. And then the last one is inner focus versus outer focus. So if you find yourself obsessing about what's going on out there, right, stuff you can't control, that's a sign that it's your ego speaking. So that's it in a nutshell, just those eight ways. So paying attention to those eight things, again, it's not anything you need to do, right? No do. You can just sit really still and pay attention to how these qualities come up and then decide which one are you going to listen to, right? It's kind of like the angel and the devil on your shoulder. Yes. From that place, you can then choose, okay, where do I want to feed my attention? What voice do I want to let lead and guide my life? So
I like this because it's my basic philosophy about reframing, which is that if you actually just train yourself to observe your mind, you can interrupt a lot of unconscious negative thought simply by identifying, oh, there's another one. And once you start to listen for that, you find it everywhere, right? And mm-hmm. it's just a kind of natural impulse to once somebody's pointed that out to you, like as you were going through those things, I was thinking of like examples where that, you know, happens for me or whatever. So those are very useful tools to have. It'll help me catch like even more of those things. And so the cool thing is, you're right, if you're going to reject one, then the natural impulse is, okay, what's the other, what's the opposite of that? What's the, you know, what's the angel version of that? Mm-hmm. So, and I think where people get into the biggest trouble is when they sense that they're doing this, or they sense it's unhealthy. They know they're anxious. They know they're worrying about things, and they haven't sat down and figured out, well, what's the opposite of that? What's the opposite of, you know, being outwardly focused and comparing yourself to other people? And so if you take the time to sit down and look at, for instance, the 8 ways that you've identified, and go ahead and do it in advance. Say to yourself, all right, when I catch myself comparing myself to people's lives on Facebook, what do I need to do instead? Having something handy that you replace that behavior with, I feel like is like you're good to go. If you will just take those principles, you can actually change your life from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A question I often ask myself in my own life, with respect to this, I mean, God, the example you just gave, like who hasn't felt that way? Like, somebody comes down my Facebook feed and I'm like, oh, well, good for you. Isn't your life perfect? You know, we all have that feeling. So for me, a really cool question that I'll ask myself is if I find myself feeling negative emotion, one, the first thing I do is I extend myself compassion, because I'm like, oh, Heather, it's like, I'm upset that you're upset. Like, that doesn't feel good, you know? So one is just to say, okay, I'm sorry that you're upset, and let's create a little space because you're not feeling too good right now. Being a mother has really helped me with self-compassion. I have a 13-year-old, and I would never want my daughter to talk to herself the way I have talked to myself for the majority of my life. The first thing I think to do is just, you know, don't judge yourself, be really compassionate. But the question I ask myself is this: what way would I need to feel about this in order for me to maintain my equanimity and my peace and to move the needle a little closer on embodying my higher self right now? I'm in full, again, no denial, right? I recognize that I'm jealous of this person or feeling envious or feeling, you know, self-doubt or whatever that emotion is. I recognize that. I'm not disowning it. But if I could be more in this moment, if I could be more in alignment, what would I need? What would I feel instead of this? And the answer is usually like, well, I'd be happy for them. You know, I would be happy for them instead of being upset about myself, or, wow, well, that's great that I have an example. Like, here's somebody that's really creating something I wish I could create. So, ooh, I am actually grateful that this person is doing well, because now I have a template, or maybe I could call this friend and have them help me figure out how to create what they're creating, you know? So all of a sudden, just that one question, it gives you an instant roadmap on what you can do in your life to help you feel differently. So we don't have to sit in that jealousy. It's or whatever it is we're feeling. What is it? FOMO, or comparing our lives to everybody's highlights.
Comparisonitis.
Yeah, comparisonitis. We can use it as a tool. It's, again, we're stepping into that paradox. It is a wonderful thing to notice that you feel resentment, insecurity, whatever, because in that moment you can use it. That very same thing that was hindering you can become your greatest help if you're willing to accept it and ask yourself the question, okay, how would I need to feel about this in order to maintain my peace and my equanimity?
That's a really good catch-all. And I think even just having the kind of break in case of emergency, you know, sending love to yourself, just in that moment, just your first response is like, okay, you're feeling crappy. If you were my child or you were my pet, how would I communicate with you in that moment? You know, like, what would my vibe be towards you, towards myself, right? I want to mention too, that you, you have an ebook called Intuitive Inspired Authentic You. It's actually a bundle. It has a guided meditation also. Does that course touch on some of this material, or is it something different? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the ebook and the meditation, it touches on two aspects of higher self-alignment. So within, when I do my one-on-one coaching, I've identified three main, you can think of them like branches or mechanism or elements of intuitive communication. So that's intuition, emotions, and desire. Those three things are the way that your higher self communicates to you. So in other words, how does your higher self talk to you? It talks to you through your desires, it talks to you through your emotions, and it talks to you through your intuition. And there's on the emotions and the intuition side, there's a lot of science behind that. And I present that in the courses I teach and in my coaching. So the ebook doesn't touch on desire, but it does touch on intuition and emotion. So it's a 28-page little ebook that introduces the concept of higher self. It gives you an esoteric and a scientific definition. You know, it kind of conceptualizes what the higher self is. And then it walks you through the basic science behind intuition and how your higher self uses emotion to speak to you. And again, it's all backed up by science. So we all know, we've heard in, the esoteric communities that we spend our time in, like, follow your heart. And well, if it feels bad, that's a sign that it's not good for you. And I 100% ascribe to all of that. I know that all that is true, but my left brain, my critical mind is like, yeah, but why? Like, I need some evidence on why that is. So, so the book presents that, those concepts in a way that just lets your left brain and your right brain go, oh, yay. Okay. I get it now. And it gives you exercises and fun tips to help you start, using your emotions as a compass, right? What using positive and negative emotion as a tool of alignment. And also your intuition as a tool of alignment. And then the meditation helps you unlock your intuition. So it's a really cool little bundle, and it's priced at $4.44. So it's like, I spend more than that at Starbucks every day. So it's a really good Kickstarter into higher self-alignment. It takes you, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes. It's not a big, you know, big deal. It's just a, you know, dip your toe in kind of thing. So
yeah, I'll link to that for everyone. Just so you know, if you link to it in the show notes, you can go to a page where you can actually read you can start reading the book right there on the page, which I think is kind of cool. And I may steal that from you.
It's a great, yeah, 7 pages. Thank you for that. I totally forgot. Yeah, I have the first 7 pages of it up, and you can just read it. And
well, you get a sense of the format. It's really beautifully done, by the way. It's pretty, which made me feel jealous. It's very nice, a very cool looking little product. This is one of the things I really love to ask people, and so I know that I'm just going to throw it out there to you and let you run with it. As someone who writes and teaches and speaks and reads all this new age personal development stuff, what do you think's missing from the conversation?
Oh my gosh.
What are some of the things that drive you nuts? What do you wish people would, what makes you cringe?
Oh, okay. I know two. Oh, Slade, you're killing me. That's such a good question. Oh my goodness. Wow. That is a great question. Okay. So I think I have two things. One of the things that drive me nuts about the wonderful, beautiful metaphysical community to which I consider myself a member, I really believe that we're onto something here in the metaphysical community. And one of the things that drives me nuts is I wish people would take the quest for knowledge in this realm more seriously. I wish that there was more critical thinking around it, not cynical thinking, but critical thinking. Many times when I'm in conversation, if I go to a conference or, you know, I'm in this community, God, you know, forgive me for saying this, please. I don't mean offense in saying it, but sometimes I feel like I'm sitting back in church listening to the fundamentalist Christian crap that I rejected when I was 10 years old. It's the same concepts repackaged in the New Age, with New Age vernacular. And I think that as individuals, so here's what I love about it. What I love about what's going on in the New Age community is that despite all the horrors of our world, we are still willing to believe. And I think that the courage to have faith in spite of so much bad that we're exposed to, right? We have endless information. Our news media outlets are constantly feeding us a diet of everything that's going wrong. And one of the things I love about the spiritual community is that even in the face of all of that, we choose to believe in something higher than ourselves. We don't let that dampen our spirits. That is what I love. I mean, I am a card-carrying, you know, flag waver of the New Age community because I think that is true courage. That is true courage when everything around you says different and you still believe. So with that being said, I want the people who believe, I want the people who have the courage to believe to start asking deeper questions. I wish that people in the New Age community wouldn't go, oh, it's, you know, the universe provides. It's like, well, yeah, but let's get to the bottom of how all of that actually works. I instead of, just maybe accepting some of these of the New Age concepts that we know to be true. I'm not negating their truth. I believe that they're true. I wish that we would have deeper conversations and educate ourselves deeper on a I don't know how to say it, a deeper level or a more broad level on how it is that all of this stuff is actually in alignment with natural law, if that makes any sense. And I feel like in the New Age community, we offload that to the people doing the research, like the Bruce Liptons of the world or the Joe Dispenzas or the, you know, insert the author that wrote the book here. I really feel like every last one of us have the ability to do that. You know, that's a responsibility, a fun and awesome responsibility that we can all share in. Those are my two things. I hope that makes sense. I've never been asked that, so I haven't had a chance to think through it clearly. But
I never prepare anybody for that. Yeah. I like to see what people come up with. And one thing that I really liked about yours is not only did you tell us what you would criticize, but you told us what you loved as well, which was a little bit of a lesson for me, even in asking the question. So I like the fact that as much as you can identify what's missing, you can also see what we're getting right, which is feels really great to contemplate. And so I want to hear about what's next for you, because you mentioned at the very beginning that you're working on a master's in clinical mental health counseling. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, like, what made you decide to go back to school?
Yeah. So my intention before my awakening experience, I went back to school to get my undergrad in psychology. And my intention then was to move on to get a master's in clinical mental health counseling. Then I had my awakening experience and I thought, oh man, this is what I'm doing. So I spent the last 4 years going, you know, in completely the opposite direction, but really immersing myself in spiritual truths, you know, fully embodying that aspect of myself and what I love, and seeing the power really that following our heart and tapping in energetically to who we are can bring. Like, that's a thing, guys, you know, as humans, this is legitimately real. I can sit in a room with X number of people with the tons of letters behind their name and know for a fact that this stuff is real and that it works, and that there is, a lot of literature. Energy psychology is a new branch of psychology that's popping up. So I went back to school, I think, after 4 years of being a professional intuitive, because I realized that this is the future. Truly, this is the future. If our species is going to make it, it is going to be because we strengthen the arm of our spiritual selves. And so that it can be as strong as our intellectual selves, right? Like, that, this is the future of our race. And I have to, for myself, I realized that I want to be sitting squarely on both sides of those camps. And also, there is a ton of science out there that we can use to bridge that gap. So getting a master's degree, I feel like, is really me just walking my talk and being willing to fully embody the best of both worlds. I feel like my coaching practice is counseling with New Age and metaphysical concepts thrown in. It really is six in one, half a dozen in the other. And graduate school is just giving me this solid foundation of on the literature and the research behind personal transformation. And it's really, so far, you know, I've got my first semester down. It is blowing my mind how much of, you know, mainstream, how much mainstream psychology really does already capture a lot of the metaphysical principles that we talk about today. It's just that there hasn't been a generation of people that are coming forward that understand both and can speak to them. So I've challenged myself with the responsibility of doing that. And so my research interests lie mainly with, you know, belief systems, ethics and morality, and also how that impacts depression and anxiety around the world. So religiosity, belief, rigid beliefs, and then mental health. So that's kind of my next step, is to explore that a little further. So we'll see where it takes me. But I'm continuing on, of course, with my coaching practice and my intuitive readings. That's still something that's absolutely going to be, you know, a part of my life, hopefully forever. So that's my next step.
Heather, this has been so much fun talking to you about all this stuff. I know that before we even started recording, we've already identified more episodes and things for us to talk about. So I hope that you will definitely come back and let me pick your brain about a couple of other things. But this was fantastic. So just tell everyone where they can go to find you online and start working with your material.
Sure. So you can find me at HeatherAliceShea.com, and that's Shea like the butter, S-H-E-A. So HeatherAliceShea.com, and when you click, you'll see the little link. It's in my little nav bar for the ebook, for those of you that are interested. I blog and do Facebook Lives. There's a free meditation. I call it the Higher Self Meditation Ritual. If you go to my website, and just click the Start Here button, you can download a guided meditation that helps you just in 9 minutes a day connect to your higher self. You get like a 21-day journal and 7 videos that walk you through how to do the ritual. So there's that. So just 2 quick ways to really get started in embracing your higher self alignment each day. So, and it's been such a joy to talk to you, Slade. You're amazing. It's been an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. Yeah, this is fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. Think about your goals, the big ones and the small ones. How do the everyday choices you make affect the outcome of your goals? You'll tend to use the same process of decision making and systems and implementation in small goals like making dinner as you do in larger goals like making a living. Observe your process with the little goals. Think of your small everyday goals and decision making as a laboratory for discovering how you tend to do these things. What's your style? What methods are most natural for you? Experiment with the little goals, and once you identify what's most effective for you, apply those same methods and attitudes to the big stuff. And I'll talk to you later.